To whom much is given, much is required. Part of that requirement is sharing. Culture is the heartbeat within our lives, and it's at the core of so many things. While we live in a time when we are starving for wisdom, I welcome you to your wisdom retreat at Culture Raises Us. Today's guest, Jaron Small, is the founder of Reading with a Rapper, which is an organization that's created to leverage rap music, its lyrics, and its content as a means to help increase the reading, writing, and retention skills for youth across the country. Before we have him walk us through his journey and this amazing proposition, I want to start with, when you hear culture, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, Aster, when I hear culture, that means to me like the freedom to express myself in any space that I feel possible to do so at will. It's boundless, boxless. It's evergreen, ever-changing. And I think that's what culture is, what it means to me. And thank you so much for having me a part of this. I'm really honored to be a part of this series.
It's an absolute pleasure. Freedom, boundless are very powerful statements regarding culture and spot on. So, you know, I had the opportunity, obviously, to meet and work with you when I was at Beats. And even then, I was blown away at how Reading with a Rapper was kind of pushing the envelope of education and how our youth can learn and grow, which I think is incredible. You've mastered kind of this notion of meeting people where they are. And I know you're going to go into that in a little bit by using music in this way and elevating the trajectory of generations of culture shapers. So with something like this, though, it's so different. It's so different from the norm, and it comes with so many hurdles. But it also comes with so many opportunities, right, of change. Talk about what got you to this place of creating this platform and give people a little bit of a sense of what it's all about.
Now, I would have to test that back to my arrival at Prairie View University. My first intersection with culture was at an HBCU. I grew up in Mo City, which is like a kind of suburbial side of like Houston, Texas. Like Travis Scott, Chase, all of us are from that same side of town. And I struggled with my standardized test in my senior year. My dad was an All-American in basketball. And to the point to where I didn't know where I was going. My scholarships went away when I was in high school because of that. And I just really just felt lost. Two-parent household, right? Eagle Scout, my troop is in the church. So I had the village, quote unquote, but I still didn't feel comfortable talking about my own discrepancies and whatnot. So I ended up going to Prairie View. My mom went there, convinced me to go there. And the first day I'm there, they had this thing called Hump Day. And Hump Day is just where there's DJs, there's music, there's dancing, there's food, there's culture. And you're seeing people from different areas of the world here just being free. And it just blew my mind. I was just like, the environment here shifted my perspective on how I looked at life and how I looked at school and myself. And Within that process, you know, I went from a kid that couldn't even get into school to being the student body president within 2 years, right? But it was that intersection with culture that gave me that confidence to want to learn more about myself and where I'm from, and then how do I, you know, think and tick as a Black man here in America. So it was Prairie View. That same time was the Boogie phase. So like the Darrow, Get Big, Kirk O'Bangs, I enrolled with him. We in class together. DJ Mr. Rogers, DJ Chose, all these artists that are really just homegrown Texas-based artists. Like DJ Mr. Rogers, they got signed to Jive Records.
Right, that's the thing.
Right, so this is all just happening at one time. He's getting a double engineering degree at the same time. So I'm just like, yo, this is... I was just an intersection of something just really beautiful, and that just blew my mind right there. It was Prairie View.
And so Prairie View is the foundation. How does that then lead you to say, you know what, based off of, it sounds like, your own journey, but based off of what you are now seeing in our youth and how they're being educated and informed, how do you get to now creating this, you know, Reading with a Rapper, and why?
Yep. So like after we shortly graduated in 2012, me and my business partner, Douglas Johnson, we started our nonprofit, which is called Legends Do Live. And it's really important because we started our first company by giving away money out of college, which is like
Total opposite. You're trying to get paper.
You know, and imagine telling your parents, like, yeah, I don't want to go work for anybody. I'm going to start my own job. And like, oh, what you finna do? A nonprofit. And even within that context, they didn't even really know what a nonprofit did. Right. So you can't even get them understanding like the duality of that was a whole nother
concept. The concept.
You understand, because they're looking like, go get a job, be stable, go work 30, 40 plus years and retire. I'm like, I don't want to do that. So I knew I wanted to help kids that we were just going through the same way. So we started Letters to Live. And while we were in those schools, and we've been able to work with brands from like Nike, NCAA, YouTube, Google, we've managed and dispersed $30 million since starting that nonprofit. And we're going to schools. And once we saw how literacy was just really bad around like 2016, 2017, I was like, man, we need to create something that's going to really attack this, because this is the foundational root of how people just matriculate through life. If you can't read and write, you can't do anything else.
When you say bad, how bad was it? Get the context of how bad it was.
When I say bad, I went to go sub as a teacher in 2013. And I'm administering this test, and it's an open-ended test. And they submit the test back to me. And one of the guys, his answers are literally abbreviated. And he didn't even put, I don't know. He literally put IDK, period.
Wow.
And that was him really answering the question. I was just like, David, do you know what, you didn't answer the question? And he was like, I did. He was sold on the fact that he did, because of texting and how they communicate. To them, that's real. Right? We start seeing how they can't public speak, or how they can't have a one-on-one conversation, or how they just are behavior-wise, and it's linked to the school-to-prison pipeline. 85% of kids in the juvenile system are functionally illiterate. So we saw like, oh, the core of a lot of these things, because they can't comprehend at a certain level to know what's good or bad. You make it squeeze low. So that's how we saw that within that. It was just rising and upticking every year. And I was just like, this is before COVID. I'm telling the mayor and other people here in stakeholders, I'm like, hey, if we don't change this, we're going to be in trouble. Long, long lasting. And people were like, oh, they glossed over it. And then when COVID came, it was just like, whoa.
Yes.
We can't even hide this anymore. And we became a really big commodity like overnight within that, for that. So we partnered with real ELA teachers in 2018 that are still teaching today to create an actual 8-week experience that teaches kids how to read and write through socially conscious lyrics, content, and technology.
So, and again, you know how much of a fan I am of this and what you're doing, and your very humble spirit, hence why I wanted to provide this platform for you to share, because it's a very different type of thinking in terms of how we educate our youth. And I think there's a broader responsibility that we have as a community on how we pour into our youth outside of just them getting it in school. Now, you are doing that work within the school system to a degree. And again, you'll talk a little bit more about that. But I even look at, you know, being in the footwear industry, I looked at us as educators. When you think of the stories that we would tell through the shoes, in the material applications, in the colors, in the graphics, it was an opportunity to stealth teach youth in a way that they would gravitate to the thing that pulled them in so much, right? In this particular case, it was a canvas of a pair of shoes. In your case, it's music. Talk about now how you specifically use rap music to engage these students in reading, writing, and retention, and what does a process look like to integrate this into educational content?
Yep. So the business behind it is we have to kind of actually, one, create a whole new category and space for this. So what we did was, you know, you have LPs and EPs when it comes to formats of music. We created a CP, which is a curriculum project. So it's an actual body of work of music, about 5 to 7 songs, where they're tailored and designed to the kids' needs. So for instance, first thing that we do when we come into a school is we give the kids a composition notebook and pencil, and we ask them, write about yourself. We just want to see what you think about yourself as a person, right? From that writing prompt, I can see your ELA issues, whether it be figure language, sentence structure, grammar, mood and tone, emphasis, whatever in that diaspora. But also your social and emotional learning issues from a mental health perspective, what you think about yourself. Now we take those writing prompts and give it to our music research department and say, based off all these prompts, what's the best artist for them to study? All right? Or indoor, what is the overall issue from the SEL or ELA? And we could formulate a body of work that would address those issues through that. So now we have that album. Let's just say one of our board members who's a part of it before, Bun B. Now, Bun is going to make an actual CP just for those kids. For 2 weeks, we're going to have curated lesson plans around the academic side of what's going on. And they go through those modules. And after those 2 weeks, they come back and write about themselves again. So we see instant growth out of how they're structurally writing things now, right? And so for another 2 weeks, we focus on what is Bun talking about? Is that a reason why you're getting in trouble? Why you don't want to come to school? Why you don't like school, but making the music and the content in the space that you're in, the medium for that safe space for that. Then you come back and write about yourself again. And actually see some instant growth on your social emotional learning side now, right? And so really over the 8 weeks, the scholar is writing about themselves. They're discovering themselves through this body of work. And they're writing their own spoken word essay rap about themselves. And then at the end, they think they have to get up in a we do an ending ceremony where they get up in a circle and they read their excerpts out loud. And it's very powerful thing. We're talking about being depressed or being bipolar, but the music was the medium for them to figure out this is my superpower. But if you've been studying Bun for 8 weeks, now Bun walks in the room to talk about why he wrote the entire album, the importance behind reading and writing. If he couldn't read and write, how he couldn't do the music business. So it just opens the door to so many other derivatives. Because now they're just eager to want to kind of keep learning because I was just studying you. Now you're in front of me teaching me. So you're doing a couple of things within that notion of where we're addressing the kid where they are, we meet them where they are, right? From a social, emotional learning, mental health perspective, but also like an academic perspective. Also, we're working with artists and they're contributing back to their society and their communities and also some of their schools. They're getting compensated for it. So they're getting a royalty per every license that's getting maneuvered. So,
Okay.
We actually go into school districts. We have contracts with these districts for like 3 to 5 years to reimagine student services. We administer our program. So anytime somebody licenses a Bun B curriculum, he's getting a royalty.
Oh, that's beautiful. How many artists do you have on the curriculum?
So right now we have our label. We just started last year, which is Education and Entertainment. We just signed our first artist, partner artist. His name is Buddy Rowe. So he's going to be the first one really delivering the big CP this year.
Okay.
Escrowed into 2025, we had people like Bun B, we had Rhapsody, talking to Killer Mike, Tizo Touchdown. So for that process, it's about like five. But Read and Rapper since 2018, we've worked with a number of artists, independent artists, before we got to this step. I would say 20 plus. And the biggest one I remember is with Meek Mill, where during his championship album, we partnered with him when he came to Houston for his tour. And we partnered with the My Brothers Keepers Redirect Juvenile Program in the city of Houston. The mayor opened up City Hall on a Sunday and was like, hey, we see these guys are on probation. Meek was like, I'll stay an extra day. This is right before reform started in 2019. He had just been in prison in 2018. I just talked to him. And he was like, I'm here. We gave all the kids Puma reform shoes. Microsoft gave them all the computers. And none of those kids are on probation today, right? Because of that notion that we did right there.
You know, as you grow this, how do you plan, because it's such great work, how do you plan to expand the reach and the impact of this way of thinking? And what are the challenges that you foresee? Because something like this is not going to be embraced by me because it's so different.
Yeah.
And you've got to break the stigma for some people of the impact of the music in which you're using to do so.
Yep. Yeah, so the good thing is, we kind of did some of that stuff already, but we did it in the background. So we've been working more in the private sector where we were having, so we wanted to make sure the data that we collect was, you know, right. But in that time, we've been able to work with the NCAA to reimagine and read the Final Four that came here to Houston, right? So we produced the very first literacy tour. They went to 11 school districts, 189 schools, specifically third grade, because that's when they start looking at school to prison pipeline from your standardized testing, right? Third grade, that's when they start looking at it. And so for us, we attacked all of those districts. We did 60 million minutes of reading between September and March leading up to the Final Four. Buddy Rowe performed actually at the halftime show, which they've never produced a halftime show during the championship game with Bun B and TSU's marching band. So we've been kind of really doing these things in spaces because we know as soon as you hear a reading with a rapper, your mind goes to one, rap in a negative context.
Yep.
Or you think they're going to read a book to kids. So we have to dismiss even
all of that.
All of that, right? So a lot of times we just do demonstrations for stakeholders. We treat them as if they're the kids.
It's crazy. As I think back to when I worked for Vibe magazine and I was doing ad sales, it was a very similar challenge and hurdle of before I can even sell the magazine, I had to sell the culture in which the magazine was highlighting and showcasing. And I don't think people understand the amount of heavy lift that you have to do when you're not able to sell the service or the product first, but you got to sell this other thing that you got to make people feel so comfortable about, but it's the same thing that's already making these people, these brands, and these services and some of their homes flourish already. But they did, they couldn't sit with that, or they didn't know that, or they didn't want to embrace that. So as I listen to you say this, it sounds like a very similar opportunity. We're not calling it a challenge, opportunity of you having to sell in the impact and the beauty of this music and what it can do to help build the writing skills, the reading skills, the retention skills of youth. And you said something that I had no clue, that the pipeline to prison starts at third grade? From the pipeline from school to prison starts at third grade?
Yeah, man, it's that test, that standard. They're looking at those tests, right? And they're saying, okay, based off who's passing or not, they can calculate and forecast, oh, they're going to go to prison. Well, they're not going to leave, right? So they're doing this as early as third grade, which is in public school, right? And that's a whole other conversation about how that works and what's going on with that from an equity standpoint, and how we've been able, I guess you can say, to be Robin Hood for our community, because we've been able to be in space that we know we can't be in because we went a different way. We've been able to kind of retain all of our equity, do what we want to do, because a lot of these companies legally have to donate to nonprofits, right? And so for us, we came to them and said, hey, we understand that you guys are trying to figure out a way to work within our communities, but you just don't know how. So we'll be a consulting creative agency for you to hit those markers for you from underserved or underprivileged kids, right? And we're able to go get the things that we need to come over here and turn them over. So once we show them physically, they're bought in, right? Because they're seeing at the end of the day, like, oh, I can still be a part of the solution. Something still comes to me at the cash register at the same time. So there's a model for everyone versus somebody has to lose in this equation for somebody have to win.
Yeah, but, and I know you said, you know, that's a whole other conversation when you talked about the school system, but really it's not, because you're disrupting it in the way that it needs to, but there still needs to be an accountability on what's the evolution of, you know, education and how children are educated and brought along, in particular from marginalized and underserved communities. What are your thoughts on that?
54% of the country reads at a sixth grade level.
54% of the full country, not marginalized or disenfranchised, under the country. Say that again.
54% of the country reads at a sixth grade level, which costs the U.S. $2.2 trillion a year just off low literacy. Because here's the beautiful part of what we're doing. I'm looking at how do I reimagine the education to career pathway model for the future, the next generation, holistically, not only just for kids, but for adults. That big number that I gave you is more adults than kids.
That's right. So that was the other thing. I was waiting for you to bring some more color to this, but the number, the percentage you gave out was not about youth. No, that was all encompassing.
All encompassing, right? And so when you think about, if you're not able to read and write in the next 3 to 5 years, how are you going to be able to go to college? How are you going to write a resume? Who are you going to hire if you're an employer, right? Because they can't even understand the basic things to even matriculate. If I can't read or write, how am I going to be able to code? If I can't code, how can I prompt AI? And no one's thinking about these things in America right now is investing in technology and not its people. And that's the problem, where we're getting too dependent on something that's going to actually ruin us, because the next generation can't keep up with it because of their bandwidth of low literacy. Yes, they know it. They may have to navigate it better than we do, but can they have a conversation? Can they think about the right things to prompt AI to do for the right reasons, right? And not be dependent on it. And that's the scary part, right? Because if they don't need people to be employees, what are they doing?
And that idle time then leads to other outcomes. Jeez.
So I'm saying that every industry has to make an investment in this space, not just for the betterment of society, because this is a human problem, not a social problem, right? So literacy is something that's beyond skin and color. This is something that's societally driven that I think will fix a lot of things when it comes to all these things that we're having problems with. If my comprehension level is at a certain caliber, I could understand, like, you know what? Let's have a conversation about why you're not giving us what you're giving us.
Rather than react and snap, I can't understand you, so I'm frustrated. So now I
gotta, yes, you're already anticipating that. anticipating you being angry, not you being knowledgeable and coming with a plan and saying, hey, I don't really need your help. So either you can be a part of this or... So for me, when it comes to the industry, music, every industry, right? I'm talking to the future before you are. I have them. Plus now, as a parent, you want to know what your kid is listening to or learning from. So you want to look at what they're looking to. Now I have you as a parent. I already have the teacher at the campus because we train the teachers to do the program and we pay them extra from the schools that pay us. So that lets you know that they have the money. It's just they don't know how to redirect it. And so we're really consulting at a high level and a lot of it. We're doing a lot of different things just from culture in this one program. So for us, we know we're going to plan to go into STEM, mental health.
Yeah.
Because now that you learn how to read at a level, I can introduce all those things to you now.
And they're all very much intertwined. Very much like culture.
Yes.
All these different elements are all very much intertwined. You just said, we're investing in technology and not the people, which is such a bold statement. And when you really look at all the things that are happening, you can see the truth and the validity, I should say, in that statement. And given your approach and your view on this learning space, you then have to have a significant amount of advice to educators or policymakers on what are the things that need to change. Absolutely. What needs to change to effectively, and again, I the sharp point is that of students of marginalized and disenfranchised communities, but you are identifying a problem that's even broader than that for in general. So what are those learnings or those things that you would tell policymaker A and B? These are things that need to happen.
One, include the people that is going to impact. So for me, right, no one ever actually brings the kid to the conversation. It's them who's being impacted by this.
Listen.
You need to ask, like, hey, do you like this? Does it make sense for you? What would you do if you needed? Or like for me, how I created Reading Rapper in 2018, it was a group of incoming freshmen that wanted to get ahead at Preview. And they were just coming out. I was like, yo, what would you change to school if you could? It was like, man, it's not immersive. There's no relatability. It's not something that's welcoming. They're literally telling me what to give them. Right. So now it's easier for a policymaker to say, okay, they're telling me what they need. How do I make sure that's worked into the deal to where they're getting a part of that? Right. I still understand that you have to get something what you need too. So let's figure this out. So if there's a general counsel where you have a parent, you have a school leader, you have a child, you have somebody from the private sector, from the public sector, they're all talking together for the intention of what are we doing as a collective, not versus what am I getting and what you're not. So switching the intent of what your policy is and what's the longevity of that. And then also the other side, man, just being a person and having fun again. You forgot that life shouldn't be so cruel and, you know, and pondering on you. So a lot of times we're reading a rapper, we do these stakeholder pop-ups and we treat them as if they're the kids. We say, yo, walk in here as a single file line. When you stand, when I actually stand up, tell me who you are, where you're from, who your favorite rapper is. And these are city council members, principals, and they forgot they used to be kids.
Mm. Jaron, you were mentioning something that is even broader of a challenge than just in the education space. When you talk about, you need to have somebody in the conversation or in the room that's reflective of what this is going to serve. And this was another thing in the footwear industry that we would talk about so often. You know, we'd go into these meetings and have these conversations and we'd have these 60-year-old solutions to 18-year-old problems. Rather than having 18-year-old solutions to 18-year-old problems. Do you see how easily it comes out? Like, have a POV that's reflective of those it's going to affect and serve in the room. Mm-hmm. Why would you not have that POV? But Jared, this goes beyond education.
Yeah. That might not be good for business though, right?
And that's where we got to let them know how important it is because this is a business. So if you want the most efficient and effective business, this is actually what you need to do. But you know what that's going to require, Jared? Somebody's got to put their ego to the side.
Yeah. And that's the part where we have to transform them because they forgot, right? Psychologically, they forgot the person before they were a position. You know what I mean? So it's getting to understand like, yo, you're doing it. You got this job for a reason. You started this company for a reason. You may have lost your way, right? But let me reroute you back to the intent of what you made this for. Made to be solution-oriented things, right? Right now, we're not being solution-oriented. We're just being greedy.
Ding, 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 ding.
And that's the problem. So for me, I'm like, if the baby boomers and even my class as millennials, if we don't get it because we lost in the sauce, I can't change somebody that's been here longer than I have on Earth.
That's right.
The people group is Gen Z. I was like, let me talk to y'all faster and quicker. Imagine if you knew what you knew now at 14.
Exactly.
So because they do have technology, there is a pro to where, okay, we give you a bit of 50% technology and 50% is my word, humanicity. Oh man, it is beautiful because this is the group that doesn't see what you look like. They don't care if you're gay. They don't care if you're queer. They're like, yo, you're a good person. Great. They're more expressive about their mental health than some of their parents.
Right. That's right. That's right.
It was submerged, you know what I'm saying? Be quiet. That is crazy to me. This is a group that wants to be a part of change, that's more aware than anything, than any other group we've ever had from a youth standpoint. And we're not even asking to be a part of the conversation, even from a Black perspective community, right? I think at large, as a Black community, we don't know how to community.
We don't know how to community. You didn't say communicate. You said we don't know how to community.
We actually say we want these things, but then when they come, what happens when we get them? We don't even know what to do when we actually get them.
So how do we community? You just started a whole nother conversation.
Yeah, I would say it's a couple. How do we community? One, it's not about you. That's the first rule. It's not even about you. It has to be something outside yourself. You may not even see the full totality of it, right? Because when you make something bigger than yourself, it allows you to create and imagine things way bigger than just you.
That's right. Significance. I call that significance. Love that.
It's not yourself. You can never outgive the giver. It's all about giving, right? And not always just taking, right? Because if you give properly, it's going to come back. So it's understanding giving. It's understanding roles, right? So for me, I look at it as like, I want to build a highway. The only way I can build a highway by myself, but it'd take me a really long time, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I partner with you and somebody else, you got a freeway. You got a lane, you got a lane, you got a lane. We put all of our lanes together. Now we got an expressway that we own, we control, and we know our lanes. So I'm not going to come over hopping your lane for a product and service when that's what you do. I'm like, hey, man, this is the intent is to help kids learn how to read and write from your angle and your lane. How can we do that? You're still getting what you want, but you're going to an intentful thing outside yourself. And so I think when you can learn how to, we understand that it's not one person's problem, it's all of our problem.
Mm. That community. So those three things on we need to community are so strong and so valuable and so necessary across the board, across the board. Thank you for that share. Listen, so is there an intentional choice you make in general to ensure that you don't deviate from your why on a daily basis?
Yeah, this is my life at this point.
Yeah.
I'm so tangled with it because I've been solving my own issues for the last 10 years, which has allowed me to solve so many other kids' issues. So I think from that perspective, it allows me to kind of stay grounded in like what's going on. Like, Jaren, have you learned enough? Have you figured out what made sense for you when you were 18? If the answer is yes, let's move on to the next phase of your life where you needed some direction. And maybe that's somebody, because I know whatever I went through, it's happening again. It's reciprocal. History repeats itself.
That's right. Everything is cyclical. Everything.
Like, now that I know, I can anticipate this happening for that 18-year-old because it's never going to change until somebody comes in and throws a little derivative in there for that. So I think it's just at the imagination and the thirst of once I get something else, we want to do something else. So it allows me to be grounded. When I'm always around kids. Always. Right.
That keeps you young and keeps your mind thinking.
Mm-hmm. Always talking to kids all the time. Like, yeah, what would you do if you had access to this? Or if you were the principal for a day, what would you? I'm always interviewing people all the time, researching, gathering things from different perspectives. So I might be at a basketball game with the owner of the team. I'm like, yo, what made you actually want to do that? Did you ever think about this in school? I'm trying to get your thought process in. What made you start ticking? Because I know there may be an intersection with somebody else down the road somewhere else. It's just, I'm always thinking about it evergreen in my head. So it's we're symbiotic at this point.
Right. So that's what keeps your why so fresh and mm-hmm. you focused on your why? Is that constant process that you just went through?
Kid, until we have every school in this country or world, Gucci, I'm not done.
So I'm thinking about the Jaren Small documentary is being made. And then it's going to happen. It's going to happen. And the opening scene to your documentary is about to begin. What song is playing and why?
Man, that's a good question. The opening scene. It would have to be Ice Cream Paint Job by Darrow.
Okay. Why?
Because it's going to be the intro scene to me arriving at Prairie View. And that was the music that was just circulating around that time. That was the thing that just opened my mind. I was just like, yo, what is this? This is just something else. And it grabbed me. That's what it was. So it would be Ice Cream Paint Job by Darrow. And I know that sounds crazy, but like that would be it. It just brings me back to the pivotal point of where I first met Culture.
When you first engaged with it. Or when you met Culture before, but this is when it really clicked for you.
Really clicked for me. College was so essential. It was just so essential for me. That was the transitional point for me.
Listen, you know, I have my three daughters, and my oldest is a freshman at the very illustrious Howard University, which I'm very proud of her on. And I always tell her and my two littles, that, you know, it's not about the education for me with college. I need you to go to experience the experience of college, because I feel like you learn the most about yourself, or the beginnings of, in college. Yeah. And that experience is priceless, that you can't ever get back again once you get into this real world. And so when you talk about it the way that you did, that just reinforced, I think, the significance of the college experience, of growth as a person, right? Mm-hmm. Education piece, that'll come, and you might be able to find that anywhere. But the growth of the person that you become in college is mind-blowing.
When it's embraced and done right, I had to go.
Thank you.
Earn for that. My freshman year, I was a true freshman. I went to parties, came back home. But I'm like, wait, this is not free. My parents are paying for this.
So right.
I almost didn't even make it here. So let me figure something out. So I wanted to want something different from myself, which allowed me to do things from that, which opened a lot of doors to where we're doing stuff now. We're Reading Rapper. Like Microsoft was an intersection that we got when we first started with Reading Rapper in 2018, and we did our first ever event was at the Microsoft store. I was like, yo, give me one of y'all down days. It's a Thursday, nobody coming in here. I'll bring people in here in XYZ. And they didn't know I already had like a database of like teachers and principals and whatnot. And
right.
All the men, they were just like, wow, you did this. And it was black and brown people. They was coming. It was just like, wow, y'all showed up. And people bought stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So like, oh, your demographic actually has value, which we've always had from the beginning.
Right.
We showed them that. And then from there, now, fast forwarding, you know, when George Floyd was assassinated, a lot of companies made promises. You know, I've seen a lot of people online talk about, I mean, none of these companies have done anything. They've been retracting their things. I do want to say that, like, Nike made their promise, right? And Nike actually chose us. I just never really made it. I didn't care about making an announcement, right? Mm-hmm. About what was actually happening with the resources that were given to us at that time to fix a real problem.
Mm-hmm. So
the promise they gave, we were able to impact the largest school district here in Texas for 2 years from the support from Nike. Like, we really did that and changed. We renovated classrooms. We did some different things, but they made good to that. And we're still having a conversation about what that looks like now, because they saw that we had to show them bigger than what they could conceive or think about.
Yeah.
Microsoft, they came back around. Darrell Booker, who's leading like public affairs there, they're doing a black nonprofit like tech accelerator. And they sat down with us. It's like, hey, let me see what you guys are doing. Bun B actually introduced us like 2 years ago before we had another conversation. Boom. Now we're at a point we get ready to come out with our own. You're the first one really that knows that I'm saying all this.
Love it.
We're coming out with our own actual learning management system that will be giving as a tech literacy grant to schools across the country.
Wow.
Program for free, so it'd all be digitized. Kids will have access to AI, new innovative technology, but we're giving kids that look like us an opportunity to really have a connection point with education and really like reimagine what that looks like, and to take away the payment barrier, right? Because if you're not paying for it now, what is the issue?
Mm-hmm.
Right? We're working with the biggest tech company in the world to solve a huge issue. We're coming to public schools saying, you know, it's free for you to have. And then we're going to, you know, be able to have some other discounted things that help them out throughout these next couple of years. But I really feel like we're getting ready to truly make an impact with this campaign, to attack the national literacy deficit, and having companies like Microsoft or other people that understand what we're doing. And if they don't understand, they're open.
They're open.
Right? And I think that's the biggest thing. They're open to the conversation. But we have to have the data to prove that what we were talking about makes sense.
Right. And, you know, you talked about those companies in that moment after George Floyd. You know, the hope is that there are companies and brands out there who are still doing the work now when it's not the hot topic. Because right. to your point, everybody threw money, or said they were, resources, roles at this and didn't do their part. It was just to respond to the thing that can give them the most scrutiny at that time if they didn't do something. But not a real commitment to doing the work that still is necessary, and there's still a responsibility. So kudos to the ones that you are still working with, who are still trying to be a part of the solve in this space. So, you know, we always end these conversations with, you know, what are the three seeds that you'd want to leave with the stewards of culture moving forward? And coming from you as someone who is so entrenched with the youth, I think it's going to be very critical for people to hear what you think are those three seeds because of your constant committed engagement with the next generation who are going to be the stewards of this thing moving forward. So what are the three things you would want to leave?
People need people. Don't get lost in yourself trying to find yourself. And lastly, just you can never outgive the giver. Always.
Yeah, that was one.
Just lead. Just lead with giving, right? If you give intentionally, just don't think about what's in for you. Just give freely, right? And I guarantee you, the things that you think about, you pray about, you ask about, they will be delivered to you. But God will only give you something that you are ready for, right? So the things that you ask about, right, Astrid, if He gave it to you prematurely, could you handle it? The thing that you truly pray for, could you handle it right now if He gave it to you? So sometimes He has to walk you through a bunch of mess or this, or a thing that you do want to do or you don't like to do, because you want to see how bad you really want it. Because if He gives it to you, it's a gift.
It's a gift.
And that's the whole point of a gift. You're not looking for something back when you give a gift to somebody, right? So the talent that we have as people, we're just gifts. So give your gift so you can receive a gift from someone else.
You just spoke into me and reminded me and grounded me on my purpose, God's plan, and using me, us as vessels. And all these things, none of them are ours. These are all His that He needs us to share in the way that you are referencing. And I can't thank you enough for that reminder. And the way you said it hit me very, very hard. In terms of a reminder. And so thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for the work you are doing. As you know, I'm always going to be a huge advocate for you. And I hope this platform allows for more exposure to what you're doing, because it's not just your responsibility alone, Jared, to do all this great work, create this program, have all these great engagements with these youth. It takes a village to now put this on our backs and say, we too are going to help with how we scale, amplify, spread this. It's not just on you. You are a soul. You are an individual who's been given the majority of this gift from God in terms of pushing this through. Now it's on us to take on some of that and carry it for you. So for that, I thank you for allowing me to hopefully be one of those individuals, this platform, to be one of the vehicles to help supercharge what you're doing. And I can't thank you enough. Can't thank you enough. And I'm so glad God is working through you and with you, bro.
Yes, sir. And thank you so much, Astrid. I know the time that we met, it was intervention when we had that. It was divine. And the way that you've been able to impact me in so many ways, and then some of our colleagues that we have similar interests, I just hear the same thing. So I'm letting you know that you are doing God's work, because the have for years, bro, it's rippling. You're going to have many derivatives forever, and things beyond even what you could see into your kid's lifetime. It's going to be amazing. It's already amazing, but just continue. Thank you for everything you're doing, because you make time and space, and you want to do that. And I think that's the biggest thing. You actually have the need and want to help people.
Thank you, bro. I appreciate it.
We truly appreciate your support, because it helps us fulfill our mission of promoting cultural awareness and personal development. Please click the subscribe button below to help ensure and solidify our mission.